Zero TR Mobile. Kilo 4LEO. Good afternoon, Jim. This is Zero TR. Let me turn this radio down. I'm just listening to watching all the girls go by. And as you know, I can't sing. How's your day going, Jim?
Not bad at all, but while you're doing all that, make sure you keep it between the ditches.
And not in reality, I was watching, I was listening to Sirius Radio and 50s on, or they call it 50s Gold now. It used to be 50s on 5. It's an old song, 50s. Let's see, watching all the girls go by. I'm getting confused here, driving and talking. The traffic's getting a little thicker. Going up to pay the water bill. And just passing the O'Neill Weenie shop here. And we like to just go up there and pay it in person. And then I got to go to the post office and drop off some bills and send some money away.
You know, they do have these things called stamps.
Well, when it's bills that I'm paying, and there's a check in it, I put it in the mail. And some of it we do online, some of it Bernice likes to see the statement, you know, and of course you can view it online, but they change their website about once a week on these banking places, I think.
My remark earlier about keeping it between the ditches, you know, in Wichita, there was a street called Oliver Boulevard that went right by the Boeing plant, if you remember.
Oh, definitely. Now, I remember seeing those big B-52 tails sticking over the fence.
Yeah, well, I lived south of town there. There was some kind of water duct or canal or something around the town. And Oliver Boulevard was not very far from where it is, but it was way out at the end of town where it's just a two-lane highway. And I'll tell you what, you talk about ruts in the road, keeping it between the ditches back then was meant something.
Yeah, I used to love to go out there and go by Boeing. I had a couple of friends that worked out there for a while. Oh, that was a text from my daughter. I just sent her one of those battery jumper things up there that we got for Christmas for our granddaughter. And I just told her it was going to be there tomorrow. Yeah, I remember Oliver and, I was trying to think of the Main Street, Douglas Boulevard. I went to a big music festival there at the Century 2, and my brother-in-law was an officer on the Wichita Police Force for 26 years, and he was also a guard during the time they were building Air Force One out there on Oliver Street.
About that, I remember in the summertime, what was it, 4th of July, they would bring in the U.S. Army artillery guys from Fort Sill, if I remember correctly, and they would do there was a long bridge there in downtown Wichita, and they'd line those artillery pieces up on the river across the bridge and do the, 1812 Overture, and so they would do all the cannon shots to that.
That's exactly right. Well, I had a director one time of our orchestra, the only director that I ever had there, and I played in the Pittsburgh State University Orchestra there in Pittsburgh and for 9 years, and she asked me if I would bring my 30-06 up there and put blanks in it and simulate the cannon shots. I very quickly declined. I wasn't going to bring around, a firearm up at the municipal auditorium. It just wasn't going to happen, Jim.
Music can be difficult.
It is. I had to do that one time for, what did they call him? Something Beethoven. And it was a satire of Beethoven. And I got towed out of the orchestra because I hit a sour note on that. Do-do-do-dum-boom-dum. of course, we done it on purpose. And then I had to play in this little group, which was very difficult. And in that group, there was an Uga horn, and I was supposed to do it at the right time. And sometime during that, I got a little bit lost, so I just had a ball with that Uga horn.
Not to all of the musicians out there, but I think his name was Ludwig von Beethoven.
Yeah, but there's another one. It's a satire of Beethoven, and he's a very famous guy. We was honored to have him there. Gosh, I can't remember the prefix of it. Let me drop this bill off here. Jim, I'll be right back with you in 0TR. For LAO in 0TR.
It's for LAO. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, that guy I was telling you about come to my Pete brain. His name was PDQ Bach. And he actually had a rope he come sliding down to the stage on. And he had a tuxedo on with combat boots.
Pretty good.
It was still very difficult pieces that we played. And then we went ahead and played Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. But he was a satirical guy and famous all over the world, matter of fact. I think he's got records out on it. But of course, if you're not into classical music, you wouldn't know that, more likely. But yes, I loved it out there in Wichita around all the airplanes. I worked at Learjet for a short time, bucking rivets on a Model 24, Jim. Oh, by the way, I had the honor of meeting a fat guy yesterday, Ford air controller, in Costco's. He came over to me and visited with me. And, wow, what a nice fella. He was in Vietnam, I think, in about the same time, about 68 as I was. But he flew those Cessnas that have an engine on the nose and on the back of the fuselage. Have you ever seen those?
It was Cessna 210, but let's see, Skymaster.
Yes, and I have a friend, Phil Rankin, that, at least when I left Kansas, he owned one of those, and he bought it from a museum, and it still had the Air Force emblems on it, Jim. It was black, and it said United States Air Force on it, and still had the same numbers on it, I think. This is N0TR.
You're in pilot training that flew one of the versions of that had an ejection seat in it, and somehow there was a sequence. He told us a story about one of the guys at the base. Something happened to him. He's either on landing roll or he's on takeoff roll or something, but he was going to run into something, and so he ejected, and the airplane continued and actually jumped a ditch and got caught in the fence at the base, at the wire of the base, and was still running when they got to it. It didn't crash, and the guy wrote up in the forums, ejection seat, ops check, okay.
That's great. Yeah, Martin Baker probably. Shoot. Yeah, he told me a few things about what they did. I know they'd go down and they'd mark the QTH of the enemy there and with a smoke. And then I think he said they could carry, the smaller rockets like we carried on the S-2 that I was in. Havars or Zunis, 2.75 or whatever they are. And those were fun, man. We'd go out and shoot a target behind a ship that was towing it. And we didn't have nothing to do in the backseat, of course. There was two of us, and a pilot and a tactical coordinator was the co-pilot. But you'd pull negative Gs, and then you pull positive Gs. It was a lot of fun.
When he was a young lieutenant, I think they were flying the F-89 Scorpion, and, you know, it just had rocket pods on it, like two big rocket pods on both sides. And they went out to do some target practice one day and decided they would shoot at some an ice formation on the sea. And they lined up on that thing and started shooting those rockets, and those rockets bounced off that ice and started coming back at them.
You know, yeah, we had a bullpup missile, but they didn't shoot very many of those. Those were expensive. That one that's sitting on the fantail of the Hornet down there at Charleston has got a bullpup sitting beside it. It's a fairly good-sized missile that the co-pilot would guide with a joystick, kind of like an RC airplane.
And a lot of the drone stuff there, you know, they had those, I forget the name, but there was one of those reconnaissance drones that they flew, and it was a famous one, and I forget how many missions it had, but I've got a picture of it in our presentation that we show for the drone program, and the thing would go fly its mission, and then the engine would quit, and it would parachute to the ground, and they would recover it, and then fly it again.
That's nice. My brother, when he first joined the Navy and was a seaman, he was at Lemoore, I think it was, or Port Hueneme, maybe it was. And whenever the fighter jets would shoot down a drone, he was on a crash boat, which was just about like a big yacht, I guess. And they'd go out and pick up the remains of the drones, anything that was salvageable.
F-4 that I refueled out of Cherry Point was a drone. It was marked for shoot down. A manned crew was flying it when we refueled it, of course, but it had already been marked up with the big bright orange tail and all that, but it was ready to go for to be intercepted by other aircraft.
Amazing. I know back then they had a reliability problem with those AIM-7s, I think it was, one of the first generations of them, and when they took the guns off the F-4s, boy, they screamed bloody murder because they were having to use those missiles and they weren't working.
One time and out in the Pacific, and they had a drone, they went to go shoot it down, and the missile wouldn't work. Somebody forgot to hook up the umbilical cord before they launched.
Yeah, there's a lot of research and development with guys flying those things, I'm sorry to say. It might not have worked. Well, this guy was really interesting. He was no bragger or anything like that. His name was Sam. I remember that. Wow, that would have been a dangerous job over there, I'll tell you for sure. But that does remind me of something. I sent it to Dave Watson there last night. I don't know if he looked at it or not. I'm sure he gets lots of emails. But I was telling him about this Cirrus. I flew in one down here at the Greenville Airport one time, and they have a parachute in the back of them now, Jim, and they had a video on their website, and it showed that parachute being deployed. And this guy was a family guy in North Carolina, and his engine just quit. I don't know, about 10 miles from the airport. I mean, it was pitch black outside, no moon or anything. And he made up his mind when he got down to 3,000 feet, he'd deploy that parachute. It was his plane, of course. And he flew for business daily with it, and he deployed that parachute. And it wasn't totaled out by any means. It was very repairable, and he walked away from it.
They were having a lot of problem in that airplane where guys would wait too long to pull the parachute to execute that thing and get it going, you know, because a lot of guys felt like as soon as you pulled that handle, the airplane was totaled.
Well, I bet they usually are. It's not a very big airplane, but oh my, full glass cockpit, two full screens, one for the pilot, one for the co-pilot. It's really an uptown thing But, of course, it depends on how big your pocketbook is as to the options you get on it. But their wing is very spatial. It's kind of split wing, and it prevents you from entering stalls or spins out of a stall accidentally. And it's got a lot of features on it that are pretty incredible, but I think they're up there around 160K, which puts them out of the reach of the average guy, that's for sure.
Wayne, that's for sure.
Yeah, with a cherry on top at that price, but you can spend a lot more than that on a fully equipped Bonanza, though.
Wayne, I didn't like to fly.
Thankfully. Yeah, my nephew that flies a 787 now, he flew me over to St. Louis to pick up my brother and his new wife as a wedding present for him. And we paid him, of course, but he could rent that one because his mom worked for Beechcraft, and it was a glass cockpit, which was new back then. And it was, I think it was glass, but at any rate, it was, boy, it's the Cadillac of single-engine aircraft, and lots of horsepower, lots and lots. And that Cirrus is the same way. It's, 180 horse or so. But, by the way, my mind's wondering here, you mentioned those variations of that Cessna. This guy says they could actually put recips or turbines on that thing.
Stuff. There was one that was a short takeoff and landing one that I happened to see one of those in, we went to the airport down in Anderson County a couple of years back, but it's made by the Swiss, and it's a real short takeoff and landing airplane. I mean, like, you can land it at almost like 35 knots or something like that, something crazy. But it had gotten captured in a counter drug mission, and then sold off at auction, I think. And it's like the number two aircraft made, and they had it down here at the airport and were reconditioning it. It was a great airplane. So there's a lot of things we can do. The one that I liked a lot was that OV-10 Bronco, which was a turboprop airplane.
Messenger OTR. I told Sam yesterday that was the very first planes that I saw. There was either four of them or six of them right in a row there at Cameron Bay when we landed, and I'd never seen such a strange looking aircraft. And it was a twin engine turboprop and two man, and he acknowledged that, but he said that's not what I flew in, Tom. And then he told me about flying that Cessna 210. But those are really a nice plane.
Great book. This is KO4LEO. If you want to read a great book, read a book called The Ravens by a guy named Rube Waddell. And it talks about what a lot of those guys did and some of the things that they did in Laos and other places. And the Vietnamese, South Vietnamese pilots, some of those pilots were great. But it's a great book.
Roger. I think those things should have been a real hot rod, man, with turboprops on them.
And they needed capabilities like that because of all of the tall mountain peaks and things like that. They had to get around and, they had to have low altitude, a lot of ability to accelerate quickly if they needed to.
Yeah, those were a beautiful aircraft in their own way, but it was strange. They kind of, what was that one that John Denver crashed in, that long EZ or whatever it was? That's the way they sat. Their nose was sitting down, and I think they were twin tails. Is that correct?
It was twin tail that had one horizontal elevator in the back that connected the two tails together, kind of like the old P-38 Lightning.
Exactly. That's what I meant. My brother brother was on the USS Kearsarge one time, and they dropped off an airplane that was made back in our hometown of Pittsburgh, Kansas, and that was the Heliostal. I'm sure you've probably seen those, haven't you? They dropped it off for a missionary to use.
The name of the airplane that I was trying to think of that I was telling you about, that's a great looking airplane, but man, I tell you what, they could plant that airplane almost on a dime.
Yeah, I saw them do that at Oshkosh. They have a contest there for the shortest landing when they have the big air show, and it's totally amazing. Well, I've heard them pilots say that in a strong headwind that plane would almost go backwards. Let me drop these in the mailbox here in 0TR. And one, Jim, but I know exactly where it was at, and now the UPS facility took over those headquarters. But my neighbor was a welder out there, and the other one, and the other boy was an engineer out there.
But learning to fly, I was in college at the time, and we were going through a flight instruction program to see if we had enough of the rudimentary skills to go into pilot training. I flew with a great lady by the name of Jeannie Ray O'Kelly, and she took me up to the mountains in East Tennessee up there about in close to Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge, and she had me under the hood, and she'd keep telling me to change my heading, just my airspeed, and you know, and then after finally about 10 minutes of doing that, she says, okay, I want you to lift up the hood and look out. And as soon as I did, we were right close to a mountain face, but we had zero ground speed. There was enough airflow coming off the top of the mountain that we were headed right into the wind, and the wind was keeping us aloft, and we had no movement on the ground.
That's pretty amazing. This is NZLTR. Well, did you hear they were holding back on that 5G network down there in Florida, because they said the FAA wanted to look into it further due to the interference with radar altimeters of commercial planes?
But I didn't see why. I just saw that the FAA had concerns about it. And but yeah, I guess it could cause a problem. We had a radio altimeter in our airplane that we would set, you know, at 2,000 feet to give us warning if we were getting close to terrain. But I don't have much experience with them beyond that.
They had just come out back when I was in there back in the 60s. And to my knowledge, I studied Doppler radar some. But at any rate, ours was just good to 5,000 at the time. I imagine it's infinite now. I really don't know. But they come in real handy when we went out. And at that time, I was riding in seat number 3, and I was a radar ECM MAD operator. And as we went to the Salton Sea, it was like 238 feet below sea level. So they come in real handy there.
Well, you always hate it, though, when you get close to terrain at night and you can't see outside very well. I did an approach into Aviano, Italy one night, and we wound up having to go missed approach, and we were having to keep there were mountains all around us, and I remember the controller coming back and saying, keep it tight.
I felt real comfortable like approaching the carrier when you had a CCA approach. That was a GCA approach was good there at this guy just turned in front of the one in front of me. North Island Naval Air Station was really bad about the fog, you know, out there by Point Loma. And the fog looked just like a wall.
Yeah, I know where that is up on North Island, but you mentioned another field earlier, Navy Lamar. They were just down the street from us at Castle when I was there. And they had a really unique instrument approach there. They had a UHF NDB approach. It's the only, based on a tachyon, it's the only one I've ever seen like that.
That is interesting. We deployed up to Miramar, and I'll never forget the first time we went up there and seeing that big hangar with Fighter Town, USA, and it was in the movie there that they made a Top Gun, and that sign is on that hangar.
Just the second Top Gun there, I know that they had got it finished, and then all the COVID stuff came out, and then it didn't. They held it up for release, I think.
Jim, I don't watch very many movies. I wouldn't make an exception for that one, though. I love to watch those F-4s. They were hot rods. They smoked a little too much, but they were hot rods. But I don't know. We go up there, and I know, you know, not being a pilot, and not nearly as knowledgeable as you, for sure, but I remember in the cockpit, because I had been through instrument S2DNE instrument. Anyways, we worked on all the gauges, and it was a school. And usually it depended on what it was, and sometimes you'd send things to AMD, but they had an instrument called a bearing distance heading indicator. And, boy, that thing was a new old gauge.
Yes, I know. I know those, and they gave me fits in my training.
This is N0TR. Yeah, I don't know if they read the tacti in it on there or not, but I know the pilots talk about the when you were approaching the carrier, if it was bad weather, that you definitely didn't want to go straight into the tack-on tower. You want to be a little left of it.
The reason that they have tack-ins, or did have tack-ins, is that they couldn't put VORs on ships because of the pitching and rolling of the carrier deck, and then, of course, the carrier changes heading and stuff, so the whole tack-in had to be able to rotate in order to keep the same magnetic north. So that's why tack-in was developed.
Ah, that makes sense, yeah, because on the Omni, and again, not being a pilot, you just fly a radial into the place.
Gave us distance measuring, and then you could fly to point-to-point navigation. And it, many years ago, civilian pilots were not allowed to fly point-to-point. They had to fly directly to a nav aid or fly on an airway, and it was only the military that could fly radial DME points or file those points and fly those, and it was because of their wartime mission that they were able to do that.
Well, that either. And of course, there's a lot I don't know. I know we had a nurse on, they'd have to spin up the gyros on the P3s, and then they had a big glass back there in the back, and it had a crab on it, they called it, if I remember rightly. Not like crabbing into the wind, but it was a little red dot, and every now and then you'd fly over a given geographical point, like an island or something, and then you re-slave that in, because it would drift a little bit. But that was pretty cool, way to navigate.
Doppler navs and the inertial navs systems on the tanker, and all those gyros can give you problems. Hey, listen, Tom, I'm going to have to get off and say 73 to you, but it was good talking to you again, and I've got to come over and visit sometime, and we got to talk about CW stuff.
Oh, sounded like a winner. Chad's trying to learn it. I haven't talked to him in a little while, but good for him, and good for you, Jim. And I haven't been on the radio for a couple of nights, but one time last week the propagation was good, and the sunspots are coming up over 100 now at times. 73's Jim, and the pleasure's all mine. K04LAO, wind 0TR is clear, and I'm about a mile from home.
N0TR, KO4LAO clear.
HXS mobile listening.
Just a few blocks from home, but good afternoon on a beautiful day, and 4 to 6 degrees is N0TR.
Yeah, it is nice out. Finally, the rain went away. Thank goodness, right?
rain now and then, but we didn't need this cold as far as I'm concerned, but it is winter time. I got no gripe. I was talking to my buddy up here in Oklahoma the other day around Christmas time, and he's an engineer. He used to come down once in a while and just kept in touch. And I think he's living in Broken Arrow now. It was like 9 degrees the other morning. I'd just soon throw that weather in the ditch.
Cold. The last time I was in cold weather was 15 degrees up on Long Island. The weekend I moved off of Long Island back in 2000. Yeah, I can do without 15 degrees.
The company on Long Island there, a computer thing for banking. I don't know exactly what it was called. I know he did work for many banks, and he lived there until he passed away, and I sure miss him. He used to call me, and we'd talk every year, several times a year. But his brother lives in Washington, D.C., and I saw pictures of that the last couple of days, and people were backed up for miles and for 14 to 16 hours, and even a senator was caught in it. And all I can say is, like the kids say, OMG.
Well. Yeah, I'm just a short few minutes from my house, also just on Taylor's Road here, heading home. So, I think I'm coming up to the 4-way stop.
Well, nice to hear you, and I'll let you go. I'm sitting in the driveway, and it blowed our barbecue off and down the hill a little bit yesterday, but didn't damage it, thankfully. It's not that old. You have a good day, Dave. This is N0TR Clear. It's your final.
Oh, good enough. Oh, this guy's, had an accident. Ah, unbelievable. Hang on a second. I got to negotiate this 4-way stop. Guy's got his car. I didn't see the 4-ways going, only one side's working. And he's got a trunk open, and I don't know what the heck happened here, but the four-way stop is blocked here in Taylor's.
Situation. Dave, I'll talk to you later. I pulled into the carport, so I hope I'm getting out okay. It's N0TR clear.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ty. Yeah, have a good day. 73, KB2HXS. I can't talk today. Have a good day.